Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated weekly design show. I'm your host, Josh Fennett. On today's show, we speak to the fated Spanish architect Santiago Calatrava about designing his first religious building and why he's always wanted to make his mark on London.
The center of gravity of the project is more devoted to public uses than to private. Why? Because it has to become the heart of a whole new city.
Plus,
people might get a bit bored of the new Nordic, and I'm very glad that I see Swedish design and Scandinavian design developing a more elegant and subtle tonality.
We swing past the Swedish capital, where the Monocle team decamped to cover the comings and goings of Stockholm Design Week. All that coming up right here on Section D on Monocle 24. Earlier this month, a Hong Kong-owned developer, Night Dragon, announced its plans for an £8.4 billion urban development scheme that will transform London's Greenwich Peninsula. At its heart is a gargantuan complex of new buildings, cultural venues, public spaces, and transport links that will be designed by Santiago Calatrava. This is the Spanish architect's first project here in the UK. Calatrava is used to building on a vast scale. He's responsible for the City of Arts and Sciences in Valencia and is the architect behind the mooted tower at Dubai Creek Harbour, which, when completed, will be the tallest building in the emirate, eclipsing the already vertiginous Burj Khalifa. Calatrava is, however, no stranger to controversy, many of his detractors citing delays and overspends as hallmarks of his more ambitious projects, while his fans see his envelope-pushing and eye-catching designs as some of the most unique and innovative of our age. Monocle's contributing editor, David Michon, got comfy with Calatrava at the Lanesborough Hotel here in London to speak about his latest project and why he's always wanted to leave his mark on London.
I first wanted to just ask you a question about your trajectory, because obviously you have found a lot of success now, but what for you were the kind of milestones to get to the place you are now and the place your practice is today?
Well, certainly there is a project who was crucial that I have done when I was 33. It was the railway station in Zurich, Stadelhofen. And it was crucial because it was the confrontation with all the difficulties that bring in itself, you see, to design a railway station from the technical point of view, but also because it was a project in the middle of the city and also in a very sensible place of the city in which several parts of the city was coming together in a delicate transition point between green areas of the city and more consolidated city plazas and then having to do with all the problems of the emissions, the impact, and also following almost in a day by day during 8 years, you know, the evolution of the project until the full construction. So I think this was the place where I had done my master, if you want to say it like that, isn't it? It took me more than 8 years, you see. And then this is an important project, I have to say. I'm working now in building the Church of St. Nicholas at ground zero. Physically, it's a tiny project in relation to the gigantic towers, but full of meaning, isn't it? And also the first time I am building a religious building. In this profession, you never stop. All the projects are crucial, isn't it? All the projects are important.
Mentioning the Zurich station is maybe a good segue into talking about why you're here in London, which is obviously the Greenwich Peninsula and Peninsula Place, which is not only a transportation hub, but combines a lot of different uses, a lot of them cultural uses, theaters, cinema, performance spaces. My question, kind of looking at that project, is, you know, at a time when I think a lot of kind of culture like that is being squeezed, why do you think those are still quite critical elements of building a new or renewing an urban environment?
Looking at the project today, you will see there is a bridge. There is a transportation hub. They are public spaces, galerias, plazas. They are also places in which people can, let's say, they are shops, they are places for exchange, for contact of people, for movement of people. There is a park, there is a crescent, they are arcades. there is even a construction in the water, isn't it? So in a way, you see, I think the client was looking for something like that. If you look backwards, you see, the client, I suppose, he balanced accurately, you know, who is the person who is capable to deliver a project who is more, let's say, the center of gravity of the project is more devoted to public uses than to private. Why? Because it has to become the heart of a whole new city, call it like that, isn't it? Because the peninsula means almost an island, you see, and indeed it's so beautiful geographically how the Thames meanders around and create this peninsula. You can go from one side into the other rather quickly and see from, you face east, you face west, isn't it? And you can do that maybe in a walk who takes you, let's say, 7 to 10 minutes, depending, you know, how. And we has also recreated this walk. Isn't it? Our project has mark and line getting from one side to another, and a walk in green with trees. When the trees, the natural trees, enters into the buildings, are still there. Oh. And even the tree becomes a metaphor, making all those roofs who looks also a little bit like trees. Finally, the point is that the client was very conscious he need to create a new center. And he needs somebody who has experience in public spaces because the project, at least this part of the project, has an enormous significance for the consolidation of a new urban area with a center, with a civic center, call it like that, because, of course, you see the O2 arena is there and remains also untouched and also undiscussed, the element who is landmarking the area, isn't it? It's not. If you look also at the photo montage of our buildings, what we are creating is a conurbation. So, I mean, I think in this matter, getting out of this conviction, I think we have done together with my client a work, you see, who has an enormous city-related vocation, isn't it? It's certainly not the typical building, you see, who is put in a plot and reach a high, has a depth, but is much more than that. This a series of buildings who speak with each other and wants to articulate around them the new coming city.
For you, you know, having a lot of experience doing these types of spaces, what for you are some of the design principles going in? Kind of what elements do you know you need to include for you to kind of make a successful place like this?
Yeah, well, you see, a principle was to create a unity. This was the first thing. Not to do a single building, another single building, and another, and a podium, the opposite. Even the client briefed me like that. We do not want to have the scheme of podium and towers. We want to have, let's say, we want to have a center. We want to have a heart. This is the second principle. So to create something who has, let's say, a universal value for all the people living there. So it's not I am going to the building 5 or I am going to the building 4. No, I am going to the center of the area of my quarters, the area where I live, of my neighborhood. So this is something very important. So we wanted to do from this place a common place for everybody being there or for every visitor. That is what we have been. We have been exploring also for, call it like that, universal references. The fact that the meridian is passing through help us also to say, okay, we will deviate this avenue who was in the master plan and put it in the direction of the meridian so that, because it's so significant. I mean, if you are in Australia, you know there is a meridian zero, isn't it? And it's called Greenwich. So, these things seems to me to be very important, creating universal references or common references for everybody living there. So the bridge is also not a private bridge, it's the bridge of everybody. The park is also a park for everybody. The Crescent, although private people will live there, but the beautiful facade who frames the park will be also the element who gives hold to the whole thing. And to say, for example, if you are living there, oh, I go this evening, you know, to the pier, you see, and let's have a drink, or we see us in the plaza, or when you arrive into the plaza, you will see whatever. You see, these kind of things was for me like a must. You understand, to create a common and a common sign, not to say I am doing this particular tower with this particular shape or something like that, you see, which it is, I mean, it's interesting, you know, if you have, it's almost the pattern from which many cities are done. There are several elements connect with each other through the grid and in a way independent, you know, with its own character. In my case, was very different. My position was just to create, to assemble things together and give common sense to the overall conurbation who will come.
I also wanted to ask you just about your aesthetic, because just looking at your portfolio of work, obviously there is such a strong common thread throughout a lot of white, for instance, but also a lot of kind of curved shapes, a lot of more organic, almost skeletal shapes, if you look at the oculus or a lot of other examples. What is it that draws you to this particular aesthetic, this look?
Well, let me explain you. You see, I always have had an enormous appeal to the British architecture, you see, since I was a student. I study with passion the works of British architects, the way how they assimilate, you know, the classical ones, how they assimilate the classic, or how the Gothic survives in this country until the late 19th century, isn't it, with the Victorian. So it's an extraordinary thing, you know, the Gothic, you know, who is, let's say, the first vestige of the Gothic art from the 12th century. And it goes through, you know, for more than, I mean, 700 years, you see, as an style, as an understanding of beauty versus structure, clarity, light, the King's Chapel, you see, in Cambridge, or and who goes over in works like Paxton, and who goes over in recent works, in my opinion, as the high-tech, the British high-tech, extraordinary, with the expression of the detail, with the precision of the detail, with the use of materials, and with the stereotyping, you know, as a matter of sincerity and honesty, how the thing works, you see, how the structure works, isn't it? I was always fascinated by that, and certainly my work reflects that. This understanding of the use of steel, the use of glass, the use of stone, or the use of concrete. You see, the white made come, you see, from my Mediterranean origins. Isn't it? I was born almost from the house where I was born. I mean, no, we could see the sea and hear the boats, you see, in the night. And so that, I mean, it's certainly, you see, there are things who are related to my origins, as the color, also the understanding, a certain, let's say, a certain sense of joy in you see, and at the other side, certainly a lot of rationality who come from very ancient schools, who goes through the Gothic, and they live even today in our days. These are maybe the two sources.
Spanish architect Santiago Calatrava there, speaking to Monocle's very own David Michon about his plans for the Greenwich Peninsula development in southeast London. Still to come on the show, we pull on our woolen wear for a trip to still chilly Stockholm to take the temperature of the city's design week, which wrapped up just over a week ago. Do stay tuned.
Visit our online shop, where you can find items designed by our in-house team and collaborations with brands that we love. Discover everything from luggage and clothes to stationery and back issues of the magazine, as well as our book series and popular travel guides. We deliver worldwide and offer high-quality customer service. And don't forget to let us know if you're a Monocle subscriber to enjoy your 10% discount. Go to monocle.com/shop and browse away. Or, if you're in Tokyo, Singapore, Hong Kong, London, New York, or Toronto, visit us at one of our shops and we will take care of you personally. See you around.
And as promised, we're going to turn our attention to the chilly north of Europe. Henry Rhys Sheridan, this show's producer, joins me in studio. Henry, you've been in Stockholm, and I know this for a fact because I saw you while I was also there. We've had a lot of fun, haven't we?
It was a great time spent over there. You obviously were writing the guide, which I know we can look forward to.
That's right. The Stockholm Travel Guide for our listeners will be out in, I think, early June, depending on when I get round to writing and commissioning it. But we're here to discuss design. You were out and about, not in my purview, not in my remit, not in my immediate vicinity. I assume you were out covering some of the fabulous happenings for Stockholm Design Week, Henry.
That's right. I was out both at the kind of main event onto which all the other events are pasted, which is the Stockholm Light and Furniture Fair. It's held in the kind of main showroom, the main conference centre in the city, which I reported a little bit from last week. And this week, I want to bring you some interviews from some of the people who I met on the kind of periphery, the kind of fringe of the fair. There were all sorts of interesting events scattered throughout the city.
So one of these things was the opening of a new showroom. So people may or may not be familiar with HEM, a very nice kind of minimal Scandi Stockholm-based design brand. And I believe they've opened up a new shop in the Vasaparken area of the city. Who did you catch up with there and what caught your eye?
It's a really interesting story, basically. HEM are an online design retailer, which since their establishment in 2014 have grown really at quite a clip through a model of basically selling really well-designed, high-quality stuff directly to consumers rather than through distributors online. And they've just opened their first physical showroom, which obviously is an interesting move for an online retailer to make. So I caught up with the CEO and founder of the company, Pietras Palmier, and he spoke to me in a kind of makeshift office that he's made in the showroom that was still having the finishing touches put to it. He told me about what the thinking was behind this move.
Of course, for us, the physical manifestation is very important. I mean, the products are very thought through when it comes to design and quality and materials. The tactility of what we do is such an important part of who we are. So in a way that collides with being an online player, and it makes it so much more important to have these physical meeting points, basically. But then again, we don't want to have that overhead of having our own shops or having that kind of an organization. So this is a bit of an in-between. We can meet people, we can show also with pictures and communication that we are for real. There's people here, you know, there's products to be touched. So for us, it's a good step in building a physical presentation.
And obviously this space isn't big enough to display all of your wares, all of the products that you've got for sale at once. Which products are going to be displayed here and why?
So we have everything in terms of families. Then we don't have all variants, but you can still see all the major families we have, such as the High Chair and the Palo Sofa. And we don't have a big collection. We have a rather curated collection. So we have two sofas, we have two armchairs, we have three chairs, so we can actually show everything.
In connection to that, you're saying that you have a very big collection. I was told outside that the goal this year in terms of shaping your collection is going to be one of editing, one of refining. You actually are aiming to cut down the number of items that you have. What's the impulse of thinking behind that approach?
So we are pretty non-compromising in many ways. And when you start having that attitude towards building a company, you know, it's a positive spiral. You want to think makes things better, you want to have even better materials, even better details. And we are at a point right now where we're really happy with the collection, but we also see that we can be even better on some parts. So instead of just rushing on and building, you know, new things, we said that let's focus and make sure that everything we have is stellar. You know, there shouldn't be any compromises with the products we have. We've gone quite fast the last couple of years, and now we see the need just to look back, look at what we have, and make sure that we didn't miss anything.
That was Pietras Palmier, the CEO and founder of HEM, speaking to Monocle's very own Henry Rees-Sheridan as the paint dried on HEM's new showroom in the Vasaparken area of Stockholm. And Henry, you're still here. There is a sense that Stockholm Design Week is a meeting of the minds for all of the Nordic regions, and you know, we've discussed it much on the show in recent years, the kind of revisionist story about Norwegian design, the fact that actually people were making things there in the 50s and 60s that didn't get the acclaim that lots of designers from, say, Denmark and Sweden did. Your next interview was by a Norwegian designer, Daniel Rybakken. Can you tell us a little bit about what piqued your interest?
So Daniel's getting quite a lot of attention in Stockholm. He was one of the designers featured as part of an exhibition of new Norwegian design at the Norwegian ambassador's house called A Colour Composition.
So this is what you were doing when you were bundled into the back of a blacked out limo.
Exactly, and deposited at the embassy. So I reported on that last week, and listeners can go back if they want to hear it. And then the next day, I met up with him at an exhibition that was a collaboration between him and the Finnish design firm Artek. So Artek have just commissioned him. He made his name in light design, but they've just commissioned him to do a series of furniture designs, a coat hanger, a bench, and also a mirror called a 124-degree mirror, which basically sets two mirrored panes at a 124-degree angle relative to each other, which creates really a strange and engaging reflection when you look into one or the other or both at one time. And they had taken over what's called the MDT, or the Modern Dance Theatre, which is a contemporary dance venue in an old torpedo factory on the island of Skeptormen, which used to be a military base. And they had commissioned a German architect called Maya Grobriger to actually build a, it's very difficult to describe, a kind of theatrical stage on which all of the furniture pieces that he had designed were placed in situ in this kind of fantasy drama world, which had some kind of vague coherency when you were there in the room. And I met up with him there, and we walked around and talked a little bit about his designs and about the ideas behind this setup. But a really interesting example, I think, of a really dynamic young designer working with an established design company and really bringing the best of both of those positions together.
I'm Daniel Rybakken. I'm a Norwegian designer based in Gothenburg. And right now we're at the Modern Dance Theatre on Skeppsholmen in Stockholm. And in front of us we have the 124-degree installation here done by German architect Meyer Grubrugge, showing my pieces for Artek.
So maybe we can have a walk around and look in some more detail at the different sets. So in front of us, we've got your coat hanger, and it's quite a surreal scene. We've also got some Artek planters filled with toadstools and moss and some taxidermied animals as well. How does it feel to see your creation in such a setting?
It's lots of fun, you know, because I would have done it really differently. But a company like Artek, they only work with, not bragging about myself, but other people that they take in, really talented people, and that are also quite different from yourself. And seeing it done by this Berlin-based architect doing quite crazy installation with you know, stuffed animals and the moss all around this, it's very fun because it takes it out of the context where I designed it. You know, you sit there and you draw up things, and I took all the press images together with a photographer, and seeing it like this is... you kind of see the objects in a different way.
Let's go around this way, because I'm particularly intrigued by the scene that combines your mirror with some classic Artek tables. So in front of us, we've got what appears to be the scene after a heated game of some kind of card and dice game. There's a silk robe that's been discarded on the floor and a classic Artek chair that's been upturned in a fit of lust and or rage. What do you make of this? What in here is your responsibility, and how do you feel about it being presented here?
Well, I think everyone that sees it, including myself, have to make up their own story. I saw this for the first time on Tuesday, so it was new to me as well, and something has happened here. It's quite nice because often when you see pieces put in a situation where, you know, you pretend to have make up, you know, this story, and it's done quite well here because we are in a theater, and on the walls you have painted on windows and doors, so you really feel that you're in the middle of a play where the pieces that aren't that important, they're only there to tell a story, like that the painted on window are just painted on, and that also kind of elevates and promotes the physical pieces in the exhibition, like the coat stand, the bench, and the two mirrors.
That was Monocle's very own Henry Rhys Sheridan speaking to the designer Daniel Rybarkin about his new collaboration with Artek, and Henry is still in the studio with me. I mean, I think it's fair to say that when we cover these events, we have a fairly seasoned team that visits a lot of different design shows throughout the year to augur things that might be happening in terms of, say, trends or things that might be more important moving forward, as well as watching the brands we like. But one architect we've watched very carefully, basically since the beginning of Monocle, is Andreas Martin Luff. He's an absolutely superb residential architect for the most part and a keen observer of what goes on in the Swedish design scene. And I believe our researcher Melkon Charchoglian caught up with Andreas Martin Luff to take the temperature of the Stockholm design scene.
That's actually been a fun week. I've been quite relaxed and done a few small events. I have been participating in an exhibition called Young Swedish Design Now and Then. It was about a competition that has been held for 20 years, and they showed this year all the winners through these 20 years and what they were doing at that time and what they are doing today. So I showed a chair I designed 17 years ago, and then together with that I showed our modular housing for young Swedes without an apartment. It's quite interesting to see that you can see some similarities in the work from the past and what we are doing today. Then I also designed a lamp for a Swedish producer called Blond. It's called Standard, and it's made of a little metal beam filled with new LED technology. And it's both for domestic use and for office use. Then I have just been inspired by all the exhibitions and talked a lot with friends and colleagues at different events, and had a more relaxed time this year in comparison with last year. That was a bit hectic for me because I designed the design bar. Took a lot of time and a lot of effort.
Out of all the exhibits that you saw at the fair, what interested you the most?
The Arctes exhibition with the winners of the Residence Award from last year, that is talking about long-lasting design. I think that was very beautifully organized, and kind of the scenography behind the objects were really nicely done, and it inspired me a lot.
Just going back to the previous question, how have things changed? Are people seeing the same thing over and over again? Are people getting bored of Stockholm Furniture Fair, or is there something new every year?
I think it's actually growing for every year, and I don't think people get bored. People might get a bit bored of the new Nordic, and I'm very glad that I see Swedish design and Scandinavian design is developing a more elegant and subtle tonality.
That was architect Andreas Martin Luff speaking to Monocle's very own Melkon Charchoglian there about Stockholm Design Week. And sadly, that's all we have time for on this week's show. My very special thanks to our ever-patient editor, Alex Funnell, and this show's producer, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and back from Stockholm, it's Henry Rhys Sheridan. If you have any comments or queries, then do feel free to email our producer, Henry, at hrs@monocle.com. Remember, you can always listen again or dip into our back catalogue at monocle.com, SoundCloud or iTunes. Please do also leave us a review on the latter. It really helps people find the show. You've been listening to Section D. I'm Josh Fennett, and until next time, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.